What's frustrating about treating rosacea is there's not one thing that works for every rosacea patient because they may have multiple different phenotypic type problems that need to be addressed.
Welcome to That's Derm Good. I'm Janelle Ball, and I'm excited to bring you thought-provoking conversations about biologics, specialty medications, treatments, and so much more. I'll be chatting with some amazing guests about access, affordability, and advocacy. You're really going to enjoy this show. Welcome to That's Derm Good. Today, my guest is Shanna Moranti. She is a dermatology physician assistant in Naples, Florida. So thank you, Shanna, for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Janelle. It's an honor to be here. I'm so excited to be on my first podcast. So this is very, very exciting. And Janelle and I, for all of you out there, we met at a recent meeting called Diversity in Dermatology. I'm on the board of that fabulous organization, which is a nationwide APP dermatology organization that provides amazing education to nurse practitioners and PAs in dermatology. And we connected over our love of dermatology and access to products. So super, super grateful for the invitation to be here today, Janelle. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for coming. As soon as you started talking, I was like, I need to talk to this lady. She is amazing. She is so passionate. And you sound like, you know, when you were talking, you just got so excited. And you know, when you hear somebody talking about something that you're excited about, it just gets you excited all over again. So you're
absolutely.
I'm just like fangirling. I'm like, we got to get this girl on the podcast. I need to talk to her. I love what you're doing. So
great. Well, I love her.
Before we jump into all of that though, tell me a little bit about your history.
Yeah. So I've been a dermatology PA for over 22 years and I'm the daughter of two podiatrists. So we kind of all knew we wanted to go into medicine, I think in some capacity. So I'm the oldest of four. So I was the trailblazer and I did a lot of my pre-PA work in their podiatry offices. And I love podiatrists. I love podiatrists with my whole heart because I am the daughter of two and I have about six podiatrists in my family. So my mother, I think, you know, during my undergrad time was like, oh, well, you're going to go into podiatry school. So this is back before, you know, electronic applications. She was like writing like letters of intent, I think, or you know, my daughter wants to apply to your podiatry schools. So I was getting all these invitations to apply to podiatry schools. And I was like, thanks, mom. But, you know, I kind of want to carve my own path. And I was kind of sick of sweeping up toenails in their offices and just, you know, so excited about what else was there. You know, I would work with my dad and I would be kind of his chairside assistant and help the little old ladies take off their stockings and get them ready for their exam. And, you know, I'd be leaning over and I was like, Dad, what is that growing out of her head? Or what is that like, weird thing on her face? And what rash is covering their body? And he was like, Shanna, focus on the feet, you know, and I just couldn't. So I think I kind of always knew that I wanted to go into dermatology. I always had an interest and a passion for it. And then when I did my rotations in PA school, I did a rotation at the University of Florida Department of Dermatology, which, you know, you see absolutely everything. And that was so fascinating. And then I did an additional rotation in Jacksonville Beach, Ponte Vedra area. So loved it so, so much. So I, you know, again, old school 25 years ago was like sending out like actual handwritten letters to every dermatologist in Jacksonville. And I was hired by a fantastic dermatologist, Michael Bernhardt, who took a chance on me. I was his very first PA and he had residents in his office all the time. And it was a crazy busy clinic. And it was my trial by fire in dermatology. We would see about 120 patients a day. It was absolutely insane. But he had like seven or eight rooms going and a resident was working one of the rooms and I was working a room and then he would pop in. But he had this magical way of sitting down with patients and making the 20 seconds that he was in the room feel like 20 minutes. So I not only learned so much about derm because he was such an amazing teacher, but also just the art of medicine, you know, and of course I inherited a lot of my nuances in the way that I treat patients from my parents, but I do credit Dr. Bernhardt quite a bit with his incredible way of putting patients at ease and the way that his knowledge came across so effortlessly. And I was with that practice for about a year and then found out about this new opportunity in Naples, Florida, and I did not seek it. I am loyal to a fault, so I probably would still be in Jacksonville if it were not for a headhunter named Elvis, who kept calling my office and asking to speak to the PA before he made an appointment. He was very cloak and dagger, but told me about an amazing opportunity in Naples, Florida, where I joined a solo physician, Andrew Jaffe, who just had stars in his eyes and if you build it, they will come mentality. And so we've grown this one little tiny, you know, 3-room clinic that he started. And he was in practice about 2 years before I joined him. And we now have 110 office locations and over 200 plus providers. So it's been insane to see it kind of grow organically. And the fact that I've been there since the beginning, I call myself the founding female, even though I wasn't really one of the founders. But it's been a really cool experience to kind of evolve and then recruit my own family into dermatology. My brother is a dermatology PA as well, and he started in plastic surgery. He's about 5 to 6 years younger, so he was 5 years behind me in PA school, went to the same PA school, University of Florida, and wanted to carve his own path and go into plastics. So he really got into the surgical aspect of dermatology and learned a lot of plastic surgery techniques. And then the initial, you know, market crash in the mid-2000s sent him into derm from plastics because the plastic surgeon just couldn't afford to keep him anymore. And then around 2011, we recruited him to our practice. So he now practices in our practice at one of our many locations, and he's phenomenal. He's such a good surgical PA, and I'm so proud of him. My baby sister is a podiatrist, so she finally, you know, kind of took over for my parents and didn't inherit their practice, but carved her own way. And then my other brother is a lawyer, but at least he had the good sense to marry a derm PA who worked with in our practice for about 15 years. So she and I were, you know, side by side co-PAs. We did everything together. I miss her dearly because they moved back home a couple years ago. But I have a great, you know, intentional kind of habit of recruiting great people. So I recruited one of my best friends from PA school to take over for my sister-in-law. So she now works with me. So the big joke for a while in this practice was you either had to be really, really good or know Shanna to get a job in this practice. But luckily they were both. They were really, really good and they knew me. So
right. That is so fun though. I'm sure your parents are absolutely proud of you guys.
Yeah.
And cool. For sticking together too. I mean, that's so fun.
I know. We never see each other, which is kind of crazy. We're always in different locations, but it's really fun to, you know, kind of be in the same practice.
Yeah. So are all of the locations just throughout Florida?
Mostly Southeastern United States. So Florida, Georgia, Alabama. I believe we're expanding in Mississippi and other places as well. So we're kind of slowly creeping out of Florida, but have some phenomenal practices in the Atlanta area and elsewhere. So it's been, you know, incredible to, again, see this practice grow. And River Chase, the practice that I'm with, merged with another very large practice, Water's Edge Dermatology, a few years back. So that's when we expanded to, you know, the 75 plus or 80 plus offices. And then through the acquisition of some really amazing practices, have grown to a pretty cool powerhouse down here. We love our organization. You know, they're very supportive of the APPs down here. I'm incredibly grateful for that. I take a lot of pride in helping a lot of younger APPs and mentoring some of the younger PAs and nurse practitioners in derm, because they don't always get the phenomenal educational experience that I did, you know, 20 plus years ago. I see that year in Jacksonville as my like derm residency, essentially as my PA residency. It was so busy and I learned so much in such a short period of time. And, you know, I tell all new PAs when I teach in PA school, I said, you know, learning the medicine in PA school is like trying to take a sip of water out of a fire hose directed right at your face. You know, you just have to try to swallow as much down as possible, but you can never learn it all. You know, a lot of times it's a learning by doing or learning by seeing. And so it does take a lot of mentoring, and there are some fantastic docs that just are very passionate about education out there, and always so, so grateful that I was placed with two doctors that just really wanted to teach and wanted me to be autonomous and wanted me to learn the dermatology space so that I could thrive and so that I could spread my wings and essentially help them build their practice. But not all PAs get that, you know, and it's difficult for a lot of the new ones coming out of school because they're expected to just, you know, maybe shadow for a few months and then jump right in and start taking biopsies and seeing patients and diagnosing complex medical dermatology. So it can be tough. So I really am passionate about education, I think, which is how I got into speaking. So that's always been kind of like a big passion of mine.
Is that kind of how you started working with diversity in dermatology and
Yeah, so I knew one of the founders, Risha Bellomo. She was the class ahead of me in PA school. So we had always kind of known each other in like kind of industry world because she was a speaker for a lot of the same companies that I spoke for as well. So we would see each other at speaker trainings or at conferences, and I saw her on podium quite a bit. And she developed an incredible brand for herself very early on. She had older children, so she kind of really dove in to her career, and within 6 months was speaking on podium, you know, and was doing national talks and was really a trailblazer in the dermatology PA world. She started the Florida Society for Dermatology PA conference, the FSDPA conference, which is so fantastic in Florida and one of the premier conferences really in the United States for dermatology. And she, you know, loved the conference aspect of things. So when COVID hit, decided to partner up with Andrea Brazil, who's another wonderful dermatology PA. And they kind of put their heads together and said, we need to come up with a space to educate about not just skin of color, but diversification of our profession. And just understanding that there's so much out there that we need to learn. And sometimes if we don't get that learning experience in PA school or at other conferences, there needs to be some kind of opportunity for PAs and nurse practitioners to gain a more diverse education. So they contacted me, or Risha contacted me pretty early on in 2020 or 2021 and told me about this organization. And I am a very busy mom. I have four children, 15 and under. So I had kind of taken a step back from speaking for a number of years and was getting back into things in the, you know, late 20 teens and early 2020s. And I said, let's go for it. You know, I never really had time to be on a board before or have the opportunity to be able to put a lot of energy towards something like that. So diversity in dermatology just kind of blessedly fell into my lap, and because of connections that I had in Derm, and I've been very proud to be part of that. It's a great organization.
That's really neat. So, as far as like mentorship wise, what type of mentoring are you able to do for other derm PAs?
Yeah. So through diversity in dermatology, we have what's called the Achieve program, which is a year-long, 12-month mentorship and educational program for dermatology APPs that are new to dermatology, like within 3 years. Essentially, it's a number of lectures given by KOLs, key opinion leaders in dermatology, a lot of docs that are very passionate about PA and nurse practitioner education, some fantastic videos, and a little bit of an interactive, you know, where these Achieve students can actually ask, you know, these very prestigious docs and PAs out there questions and really kind of learn from them. And then we do every other month, we do mentorship kind of sessions where we're available. You know, it's kind of an online Zoom call, and we're there to answer questions and then kind of dive a little deeper if people need help with certain things. You know, we have leaders that are very passionate about publications. And if you know, are an APP and you have a really amazing case and you just don't know how to get it out there, you know, you could speak with one of our leaders who can help you maybe get published. And then there's, you know, PAs that are a little bit more passionate about contract negotiation and all of that. You know, the business aspect of medicine can be very confusing and overwhelming for new APPs that are still trying to learn the medicine, let alone learn the business side of things too. So the mentorship opportunities that are there are really fantastic to be able to pick the brains of people who've been in your shoes.
Yes, you know, that is, it's so needed too. I mean, in any area, even as a biologic coordinator, I think it's so needed for us other coordinators and just building what we do best on my end. You know, I think it's good to continue to learn because, like you said, a lot of stuff you really have to learn by doing, and you don't know what you're going to run into unless you're working through it and trying to figure it out.
Absolutely. And that is so true for the world of access, which, you know, it's one of my new passions, and I know we share that in common for sure. So we have this, again, giant practice, and we have no biologic coordinator. So we are not blessed to have one. So a lot of the access burden, and I will call it a burden because it takes time and energy and effort. And you can either see it as a, you know, a kind of a triumphant victory, or a lot of people unfortunately get defeated and they give up and they say, forget it, I just can't do this, or I don't have time for this. But a lot of that burden falls on our medical assistants and the APPs, because we're the ones that are passionate about, you know, potentially getting our patients on the best medication possible. And you know, this is where I get all fired up, because, you know, we go to conferences, we learn, we want patients to be on the latest, greatest medications. And the patients are paying insurance to be able to have access to the latest and greatest medications. You know, maybe they don't want a medication that came out 50 years ago. You know, maybe they want the new stuff. Imagine that, you know, so that's something, you know, that's an area of medicine that I have become, you know, incredibly passionate about and speaking about. Did a virtual talk with a biologic coordinator, and it was sponsored by industry. It was fantastic. And it was basically talking about, you know, how do we work together, you know, from APPs to BCs, and also, you know, for the practices out there that don't have a biologic coordinator. I think the knowledge that you all have and that you all, again, learn by doing is so incredibly important. And it's so difficult for the dissemination of that information to get out there, right? There's nobody, I mean, unless you're searching it, no one's spoon feeding you that information. You know, there's not. I've been very lucky for 20 plus years to have brand new medication options delivered to me on a silver platter by sales reps. You know, for the first number of years, you feel like, you know, yes, I need to go to conferences to learn the disease states, but I can learn about everything just sitting in my office and having somebody come in and tell me about it and give me lunch to listen to their new product, you know? Right. So the biologic coordinator space, I think for those of you out there that have a BC, you are so lucky and you are so blessed, and you better treat them well, because our biologic coordinator, I'm so proud of him, but the one who had worked with all of our APPs, because it truly, in our practice, we have a few docs that do specialize in a lot of the complex medical dermatology. But because we have such a huge diverse practice, we have a lot of Mohs surgeons, we have dermatopathologists, we have plastic surgeons, we have, you know, doctors that just deal with Medicare, or doctors that just do, you know, skin cancer. I mean, I have derms in our practice that won't even see rashes because they're so busy cutting out skin cancers all day. So because of that, I think a lot of the opportunity to treat medical dermatology falls on the APPs in our practice. So we are the ones that are needing, you know, the most help with access oftentimes. And we had a fantastic biologic coordinator who did so much for so many of us. And he was scooped up by industry, because industry said, oh, wait a minute, you're so knowledgeable about this process, we're going to pay you a lot of money to come work for the pharmaceutical company and teach, you know, everybody how to do this. And so he's out there, you know, kicking butt and doing a great job. But it's really, you know, now kind of fallen again back on the APP's lap and also on our medical assistants.
Do you feel like you're doing a lot of the prior authorizations and educating the patients?
For sure. Yeah. So I really, you know, as I say on podium, because I get all fired up about it, I'm like, you know, I have this saying, like, friends don't let friends use Walgreens. And I tell my patients that all the time. And I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying that. But I love that line, because it's true. You know, you walk in, and no offense to the Walgreens pharmacists out there, I love you all and thank you for what you do. But I get it. It's a business. And you know, the Walgreens pharmacists want to get bonus. They want to get, you know, the most bang for their buck and the most out of their job opportunity. And so, you know, they oftentimes get bonus for switching branded products to generics. They often will purposefully try to convince the patient, like, oh, we don't have that medicine in stock, so I have this on the shelf and here you go. And so many of the times that decision is taken out of the prescriber's hands, which is frustrating, you know, for those of us who hear later, who see that patient, you know, at their 6-week follow-up, 8-week follow-up, and they didn't get the medicine that I prescribed, and they didn't call us back because they just assumed that their friendly pharmacist was doing them a favor by giving them, you know, a product that might being generically equivalent, but it might not. It might just be a formulary exemption that they say, oh, okay, well, you can't have this. So let me look down on the list. Oh, I have this one in stock. Here you go. Let's switch it out for this. Now I'm reaching here, because that's, you know, that is not always legal. So they do have to check back with us, and they're supposed to get our consent to do so. But, you know, it ends up frustrating the patient. because they often don't understand the, you know, the powers that be and all of the different things at play here. So I primarily try to use specialty pharmacies. I will always try to start an electronic prior authorization in the room while the patient is sitting in front of me. And I explain, you know, hey, look, I'm going to try to get you the best of the best. You know, I want to put you on the medicine that I would put my kids on, you know, that I would trust on my husband's skin, on my dad's skin, whatever it is. I treat people like their family. And I think that's how we should all operate. You know, in my talk, I said, you know, treat patients like you want to be treated, but we got to treat patients way better than that because we're the worst patients. You know, so treat
that
patients
is true.
Like, treat patients like you would want, you know, your beloved grandmother to be treated, or treat patients like you would want your, you know, a social media influencer in your area if they came to see you. Treat every patient like they are a social media influencer so that they can give you some good street cred. You know, or treat patients like they are the kids of the most prestigious doctor in town. You know, I mean, I think all patients deserve to be treated like they're the best of the best, and they deserve to be given options.
Right.
That's my other frustrating, you know, point is I'll often talk to dermatologists or PAs out there, and they're like, I just can't do prior auths. It takes too much time. I'm just going to give them generic brand X. And then I step back and I say, okay, well, what do you use? Do you use that generic? Well, no, okay. Well, why do you think your patients deserve less? You know, and that makes me so mad because, you know, there's so many providers out there. I love the acne and rosacea space, but so many providers out there, they see acne on their schedule and they already have a pre-filled out prescription before that patient even walks in the room. And I'm doing this, like we actually write prescriptions anymore. We don't, but they already, you know, they already have a standard of care before they've even spoken with that patient. They already are like, oh, generic tretinoin, generic clindamycin. You haven't even talked to the patient yet. You know, you haven't even heard what they've tried and failed. Like maybe they've already tried that. You know, I used to have patients come in and bring this baggie of products and it was like so many of the same things. And the same is true in eczema and psoriasis. You know, how many different versions of clobetasol can one patient try before we try something other than clobetasol?
Right.
You know, or how many different versions of topical steroids do they have to fail before they're even offered these wonderful non-steroidal options that are out there? So I, you know, I get all heated and I get mad and my MA is, you know, they're so awesome and hardworking and they're in their 20s and so they're young and they want to take on the world and they haven't gotten, you know, jaded and annoyed yet. And I'm like, okay, I love that passion. Like, what are we going to do about it? Let's be that moment of change. Like, let's be the ones to finally, you know, cross the threshold and offer them another option. But you need to advise the patient like, hey, look, your insurance company wants me to only write these very few meds that are on your very, very limited formulary. We have to try those first oftentimes. So sometimes there will be a step edit we have to go through and that medicine may not work at all. And I'm sorry that you have to pay for a medicine that will not work at all, but I want you to be on the best of the best and you have to try and fail something first. So hopefully they will offer that step through medicine for a very small amount of money or a very small copay. And then we can try to get you, you know, on that latest and greatest med. But that conversation, again, takes time. And, you know, I'm usually doing it while I'm examining and while I'm doing my counseling and while I'm explaining everything. And then my AMAs take over. So I've really tried to make it fun for the AMAs to kind of get into the, you know, get into the fight a little bit. And because they're going to be APP someday, you know, most of the medical assistants that I work with are pre-PA or pre-nurse practitioner students, and they're doing their clinical rotations. So they get passionate about wanting, you know, wanting their future careers, you know, to offer patients great options. So, you know, oftentimes, you know, once they like clear the cover my meds queue and once they've kind of worked through all those prior auths, I'm, you know, I'm like giving them high fives, I'm buying them Starbucks, you know, I kind of gamify it a little bit and I, you know, I make it a little competitive. Oh, okay. Well, so-and-so got, you know, 5 covered today. How many did you get covered? You know, almost like I do with my kids, you know, so-and-so cleaned up their socks. Why are yours still on the floor?
That's good. That's good.
But I think, you know, I think getting them involved in the process and then they feel like they, you know, have made a difference for patients. So I love, you know, kind of the all for one and one for all mentality to try to get our future, you know, providers excited about access too. It's a grueling subject. Everybody rolls their eyes and gets very frustrated. They just want the magic wand to get everything covered, and that's not always the case. We have to work through the steps. So I would love to pick your brain and hear your, like, what are your tidbits? Like, what am I not doing that I need to be doing?
There's so many little tiny things, and you think about when you get a prior authorization, it's not just one and done. It's not just a one-stop shop. You don't just do the PA and then send the patient on their way. There's so much more than that. There's so much education that needs to be done, and not only education for the patient, but for the office too. I think there's so much that gets missed when it comes to the documentation and being as detailed as possible,
That is so true.
because that really is setting you up for success. When you have all the details and you've got as much history from the patient, they came in from another dermatologist and we don't have all of those chart notes, or the patient comes in and says, "Oh yes, I tried this medication and it was a red and white tube, but I don't know what it was, but
With the red and black letters on, that one, that one.
yes." And so I love making sure that offices understand you got to get the education information. You've got to get the tried and failed history. Maybe ask the patient to go to their local CVS and get a list of their medications that they tried and failed, and bring in their pharmacy benefit card. So it makes the beginning process a lot easier. And now you're setting the stage. You were talking about having to go through step therapy and things like that. So, when you do get that patient early on and you're able to say, okay, this may progress to needing a biologic or another specialty medication, so let's get started with the right medication that most of the time they're going to require.
And I think that's so important to get that education out to the APPs and the docs prescribing these medicines. And I think a lot of us have caught on to that from the very beginning, when I see a severe atopic and I know they're either going to need, a potential biologic like dupilumab, or maybe even, one of these fantastic topicals, non-steroidals like the topical, JAK inhibitor, the new ones that are going to get indications for AD, roflumilast, and the aryl hydrocarbon receptor agonist. I don't know if we're allowed to say name brands on this, but I'm trying to be as compliant as possible. But I'm so excited of getting indications for these new drugs and being able to offer safe medicines to kiddos. And everybody, obviously. But when I tell a patient, like, hey, look, like this medicine is given to 6-month-old babies, like it is that safe, it's so reassuring to the patient. And I can't say that with clobetasol. I can't say that with triamcinolone. I get so mad when providers prescribe clobetasol and triamcinolone for the littles, The parents aren't always educated as to what could happen and the problems with those. So very excited about the non-steroidal option that we have right now, like crisaborole and Opzelura, but other ones to come, So when I see an AD, I immediately look at their tried and faileds, and I'm immediately trying to have my MAs go back and do like a review of their pharmacy benefit. Is sometimes that information will be populated in EMA, in our medical electronic medical record assistant. It's basically already pre-programmed. We have to get the patient's consent to do so, but you'd be amazed how many APPs don't know that that is an option, and they have EMA and they work with EMA every day. I went through that process on podium and said, hey, look, does everybody know that we can actually check patients past tried and failed? And the crowd was like, oh, like
I know I
shocked.
texted one of my friends when you were saying that too, and I was listening. I was like, "Did you know this? Just in case."
And
But
it's
this is
not
something that everybody should know,
everybody should
especially, if they're using Emma.
absolutely. So it's only really helpful if the pharmacy system does report to that same agency that then, captures that data. If you go to a small mom and pop or your local grocery store chain, likely they may not report it, or they may have a different reporting system. So it's not always, foolproof, but it helps a lot. And it's mind-boggling to so many providers that the patient has no idea what they're using, no idea what they are on. I'm taking it's the blue pill, or the white cream, in the tube. So they and then these names are complex and they are hard to remember. So oftentimes, when we are seeing a new patient and they are already on product, our front desk is reminding people, hey, if you have a list of medications either bring your list or take a picture of what you're using. You know, everybody's got a smartphone in their pocket these days. Even my, almost 80-year-old father, he's a flip phone that has a camera on it. I mean, come on. Everybody can take a picture of their medicine cabinet or of their bathroom counter and show us exactly what you're using and what you've tried. And, before you throw that tube in the garbage can, take a picture of it, so that we can capture that in the medical record. And we know what you've already tried, because if we don't have documentation of that, then we may have to retry it just to prove to the insurance that we've checked that box.
Right. Even patients that may not even be a candidate for some of the topical therapies, proactively putting that detail in the notes is going to be so beneficial. And that gets missed a lot.
Absolutely. And I've had rejections on biologics if we didn't tell the patient, if we didn't advise the patient to moisturize. If you don't have topical emollients and moisturization counseling in there in your note, it's one of the things that they recommend. So if you are type A and you are very OCD, you will love the prior auth process, because they are very, very type A about checking each and every single tiny box before we're allowed to move on to the next stage. Right. So, it's teaching, our front desk to ask patients to bring in the proper information, to bring in previous records, to bring in their proper insurance information. And then it's education from our medical assistants or our assistant side of things that, do the patient intake, and documenting all of that in the patient record is so important. Right. It also is up to the APPs to make sure we're doing the proper counseling, that we're giving them all the options that are appropriate for their condition, and that we are, getting excited and getting the patient excited about the newest, latest, greatest. Right. Because I think we, if we say, oh, well, I mean, you could try this, but, it probably won't be covered. They're not going to be excited to go through the prior auth process,
Well, and you know what? The other part too with that is, if you're getting the patient excited about a medication, and then maybe it's a commercially insured patient, and then you don't have the documentation done, so you get a denial. And now the patient's perception is like, oh, they told me this is the best medication and I need to be on this one. And now I'm getting this denial from my insurance saying that I can't get it. Now what do I do? And then it's like, now I got to go for the second best. Like, I was all excited and hyped up about this.
Yes. So but, we really have to walk that tightrope, as providers, because, I like to give patients a lot of options, because some patients are truly, very needle phobic, or some patients can't swallow pills, and some patients will truly only ever want to use topicals. There are some Accutane patients that are Accutane candidates, and I know they need oral isotretinoin. Right. And it is it's truly a very difficult conversation to convince that parent that no, your child will get horrific scarring if we do not proceed with this oral medication. And I know you are all holistic, and I am all for that. And there's so many wonderful, holistic options out there, but not for this condition.
Right.
We will be doing harm if we let the patient continue on the current therapy. So I think giving options is really important, and telling them hey, if I were in your shoes, if this was my child, this is exactly what I would want for my kiddo. And if my kiddo was suffering and not sleeping at night and groggy at school and not living their best life because of their skin condition, this is something that we can do something about. Like, I can help this, and I want to help this. So it's just explaining the process to the patient. Like, you might get a denial. That's okay. We're going to fight for you, and we're going to fight for this. And they may say no the first time. They may say no the second time. But guess what? I am so stubborn that I'm going to keep fighting for you. And just if the patient knows that they have someone in their corner that will go through this process for them, they're so grateful. But, I'm grateful to them also for sticking with me and allowing us to work through the process, because it is tedious and it takes a while sometimes.
Yes, that is 100% true. That was one of the reasons why we have such a high rate of getting access for patients within my company, is we do that education on the back end. We want to make sure we're preparing, you got to prep. You can't just jump into prior authorization thinking I can wing it. No, there's got to be preparation there. You got to make sure you go through the notes. You got to check, make sure you've got everything, because really I could probably look at a patient, you know, a prior authorization form, look at the chart notes and tell you before I even start that PA if the patient's going to get approved or not. But now, you know, when you have these commercially insured patients, majority of the time, they're all going to be able to get the medication. So the ability to get the medication is there. And it's just how we're preparing and getting the access. And like you said, I'm going to fight for the patient. I'm going to make sure that they know. But part of that is educating the patient, preparing them. Okay, don't worry if there is a denial. If you get this denial letter, because a lot of times insurance companies like to scare people and say, oh, well, if you get this medication, you're going to be paying X amount of dollars out of pocket. And then they get freaked out and they're worried and like, oh, I can't get this medication now. They're going to charge me. They're going to send me a bill. Sure. No, don't worry about it. We're going to continue the fight. You know, there's a lot of these companies have bridge programs and support available, patient assistance, access. So the access is there. It's just a matter of how we do it, how we're preparing in the beginning, preparing the patients and making sure that we've got everything that we need to get it done. You know, it is a lot of information. There's a lot of tedious little things, but it does not have to be that difficult. It really doesn't. It's just time consuming. And it does take that person that is very detailed, going to pay attention to detail to really get things done.
So true. It's so, so true. But I love what you said. Like, anybody with commercial insurance should have access.
Right.
Period. You know, but that is only true if their providers are willing to, you know, go over those access hurdles. And there could be a lot of hurdles, you know, but I truly believe that patients deserve it. And we should be in the camp that wants to fight for our patients and wants to do those. And yes, it may take some time. So if docs and APPs don't have the time, and believe me, clinic gets very busy, it gets very stressful. And sometimes we don't have time to, you know, get off our you know, the train of seeing patient after patient after patient and sit there and fight on the phone, you know, with the insurance company for a long time. But we can sometimes put the prior auth back onto the patient. And the patient is motivated, like they may be willing to start their own prior authorization. So a lot of times patients can start their own PA, which is pretty cool. And then they might be at home where they have all their medicines in front of them and they can actually put in what they've tried and failed. Or, you know, I just have our medical assistants, you know, reach out to the patient and say, look, we're trying to help you here. I really want to help you. Please take a picture of everything that you've used in the past. Please take a picture of everything that's in that medicine cabinet or everything that's in your, you know, the drugstore graveyard is what I call it. You know, that drawer in your bathroom where you just shove everything that doesn't work.
One of those.
I'm sure everybody does, right? So take everything out of your drugstore graveyard and line it all up on the counter and take a picture of it and put it into your patient portal. Now we have electronic portals for almost everything now. So patients should be able to very easily upload a picture of everything on their counter in their drugstore graveyard, even over-the-counter products, and tell us what they've tried. So, you know, I think a lot of times there's a lot of patient entitlement and they just want everything and they don't want to do any work for it. So we can put the onus back on the patient and ask them to help us, you know, do a little bit of that background work and do that little investigative journalism, essentially, and help us fill out some of these forms. And we've gotten them excited about the newest, latest, greatest, and we've gotten them hyped up and given them samples and let them try it, and they're a believer, then maybe they'll be willing to go for it. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the product will be free. And that's another, you know, thing that I have to talk a lot about with patients is that, you know, there's a lot of money that goes into FDA approvals and into the research and development. And we want to continue R&D in dermatology. We don't want that funding, you know, to go away. And we want to continue to bring amazing products into this space. So sometimes there's going to be a higher copay if your insurance plan is one that was chosen, you know, with a very high deductible. And luckily, a lot of these insurance companies have made these copays pretty reasonable. You know, they're usually between a $25 and $75 copay, but they typically will last multiple months. So again, in the acne space, I'm sometimes prescribing multiple products. And so that very first time that they get the call from the specialty pharmacy, it can be multiple copays, but they may not need to refill these every month. Oftentimes they will last multiple months. And then sometimes we're even trying combinations of products to try to get patients to pay one copay. You know, Cabtrio is the newest, latest, greatest in dermatology, and it's a first ever triple combination product. And so I tell patients, instead of paying three copays, you're only going to pay one, you know, and that's fantastic. And oh, by the way, it's probably going to last more than 2 months, maybe even 3 months. So then a $75 copay doesn't seem so scary. And I guarantee you that those patients are also walking into Sephora and Ulta and paying probably more than $75 for a lot of, you know, four-letter word stuff that doesn't work. So a lot of us, you know, and I think a ton of people get sucked into ads on social media, or they'll, you know, you'll kind of go down this rabbit hole of a product that's sold, you know, for whatever. And it's very clever marketing. Does it have the science behind it? And I'm very evidence-based driven. I want to see the data. I want to make sure that this product is actually going to work for them. You know, it gets me so frustrated for patients when they come in and they bring like hundreds or thousands of dollars of product that they've tried from the department store or from Ulta or from Sephora. And it's just not really, really never was intended for the condition that they have.
Yeah, I know. And I see that so often now, especially, you know, like on Instagram and, you know, social media, the so many really good, I'm like, oh, what is this? And then, but now I'm like, is this really good for your skin?
Right.
What is in this? What are the ingredients?
What
dermatologist said this was good?
Exactly. Exactly. And who's getting paid to promote this?
Right. I'm questioning everything now.
Well, good for you for questioning, because so many people just blindly accept marketing, right. You know,
I know.
As law.
Well, you know, for the skincare stuff, you know, other things.
Right.
Still be questionable.
I know. And there are some great websites out there. I mean, I tell all moms of teenage patients to download the Environmental Working Group app. So it's the EWG.org. It's the Skin Deep app, it's called. And it's not all inclusive, but it has hundreds of thousands of products put into this database of products. So the Environmental Working Group, and this started years ago, actually started ranking products with their ingredients and essentially giving them a toxicity rating. So when I was pregnant and breastfeeding, I was so careful about everything that not only went into my body, but on my skin, because I know that skin is such a porous, you know, layer. It's a membrane that things can easily get systemically absorbed through. And I think we're careful about that when we're pregnant, you know, and we're so good to this developing baby, and we want to make sure we're all these earth mamas and that we're doing such a great thing and you know, being all organic and what have you. And then the babies get here and we're just so tired, you know, we're just so tired. Mm-hmm. So sure, I'll put this calming baby lotion on my baby to make sure that they stop crying. And what's in that? You know, there could be toxic ingredients in that, and then that's not good for your baby. So, and then our babies grow up to be teenagers, but they still have a very porous membrane, and they could be putting acids and things that are toxic on their skin. And we as parents need to say, like, that's not okay. So just because it has some pretty label and just because Sephora is, you know, promoting it this month does not mean it's okay for the teenagers and preteen skin. So this EWG app, again, is not all inclusive, but I will often use it as when I have to walk through Sephora with my three daughters, I have my barcode scanner up on the EWG app and I just scan the barcode and I'm like, nope, that's toxic. You can't have it. Sorry. Wow. And then it literally ends the discussion and they're not begging and pleading me to buy something. And, you know, they're very good about knowing sunscreen ingredients and I'm so proud of them. And believe me, this generation is unbelievably educated about skincare. The preteens, I mean, I used to beg 13-year-olds to even wash their face. And now the 12 and 13-year-olds are coming in and telling me, well, I do this cleanser and then I do this toner and then I do this serum and then I do this vitamin C and then I do... And they have a skincare fridge in their bathroom and they have like a seven-step regimen in the morning. It blows me away. So I'm often learning from my 12-year-old patients, you know, oh, is that a new product? Okay, let me look that up real quick, you know. But I'm telling parents, like, hey, look, you know, be their guide, you know, help them choose good products, just as we need to help teenagers, you know, learn about good sunscreen. My kids know if it doesn't have a Z or a T, Z or T, zinc oxide or titanium dioxide, as the only ingredients in the active ingredients, they are not allowed to use it about chemical sunscreens at all. So they look for the Z or the T. If it's a Z or a T, they're allowed to use it. So if you look at formulas of things, it's super confusing and it's all in scientific language. And not all acids are bad, right? So we can't just say, don't use acids, because there's some acids that are good, you know? But websites like that, and that's the only one that I use, but I'm sure there are others out there. And if there are, please contact me and I'm happy to try them out. But I just love being able to give teenagers and give parents the educational opportunity to say, hey, look, this is probably not a good product for you at the moment, you know, and or ever. So please don't buy it. Please don't use it. You know, let's use good products that are not toxic for our
Right.
skin.
Yes. So you're also a rosacea specialist.
I am. I love rosacea. I have rosacea, so I'm not only the speaker, but I'm also a patient.
Okay.
Happy Rosacea Awareness Month.
Yes. So tell me, okay, what are do's and don'ts for
Yeah.
rosacea?
Great question, because there are a lot of don'ts. Rosacea is a condition, for those of you who don't know or don't get passionate about rosacea or who are not Irish. I think all Irish faces out there have a little bit of rosacea. It's part of our charm. But the fair-skinned individuals, you know, usually our Fitzpatrick's 1, 2, and 3 patients are going to be more the demographic that's going to be prone to rosacea, or they're going to be bothered by the rosacea more because it will be more visible. But our darker skin patients, Fitzpatrick's 4, 5, and 6, can absolutely get rosacea. And they may not see the red, because red doesn't always look red in all skin tones, but they may experience a lot of lumps and bumps in their skin. They may experience burning sensations or heat, you know, flushing and blushing essentially, but they're not seeing the blushing. They may notice a darkening of their skin or a more violaceous color coming to the surface of their skin. So rosacea is a condition that is an inflammatory skin condition. And a lot of years ago, it was kind of considered the adult version of acne. So, you know, we were supposed to grow out of acne in our 20s. And a lot of times, rosacea would start in the 20s and 30s and then continue to get worse over time. But rosacea has a lot of different phenotypes. We used to call them subcategories of rosacea. There's four traditional subcategories, but we don't use that wording anymore. We now basically use the phenotypes, which is redness, flushing and blushing, or persistent facial erythema that can come and go or can stay persistent. Papules and pustules, which can be look like little red bumps or can actually look like whiteheads and pustules. And those again come and go. They can sometimes be very sore, but they can traditionally kind of pop up. And then telangiectasia, or broken capillaries. So if you see little broken blood vessels on the surface of the skin, the branching telangiectasias, or just kind of matted blood vessels that come to the surface of the skin, or phimatis changes, which is when the certain areas of the skin, and there's different types of phimas, there's rhinophyma, there's gonadophyma. But the phimatis changes can actually create swelling of the skin, so much so that the pores become so much more noticeable and open and dilated, and the skin kind of tissues begin to swell. And they swell so much that they actually can physically change the contour of that area of skin. So patients' noses can actually get bigger and wider and broader and very lumpy and bumpy over decades of non-treatment. And phimatis changes are actually non-reversible. Those are, you know, would have to be corrected surgically by a plastic surgeon or laser. Ocular rosacea is another kind of phenotype that often goes unnoticed by derm or unnoticed by patients as a dermatologic condition. So the conjunctiva of our eyes can get very red and injected. And interestingly enough, it will often flare when the skin flares, but patients don't always see that, you know, as a correlation. So all of these inflammatory factors can come from different triggers. And the pathophysiology of rosacea is phenomenal. It's very complex and it's multifactorial. So there's a lot of different inflammatory cytokines going on and different triggers and different cells that are triggered in our skin. But the main, you know, most common triggers for rosacea are going to be sun exposure, heat, exercise, stress is a big one. Caffeine, alcohol, spicy foods, you know, a lot of the good things in life will actually create additional inflammation within the skin. So, rosacea is a condition that is very frustrating for a lot of patients because it can start very subtle. and it can continue to get worse and worse over time. But because it's chronic and it kind of every once in a while is exacerbating, when the patients start to get a little bit frustrated or worried about it and they're about to make that call, maybe it gets better. And so they don't call us right away. They don't come see derm right away. And maybe it's not that noticeable when they finally get in to see their dermatology provider. So I oftentimes will encourage patients to take pictures, take pictures of yourself at your worst day. Like, let's see, what does that bad day look like, and hide them in the bowels of your phone somewhere, not in your, social media feed, what have you, but like make sure that you are capturing those bad days so that we can see what that looks like. Because patients often come in and they're so frustrated. They're like, it's such a good day today, and I always say, well, it's like your car stops making that noise when you bring it into the mechanic. So rosacea is a condition that, I've personally suffered with being an Irish girl, and it definitely has, plagued me for most of my 30s and 40s. So it's something that I really have a lot of empathy toward treating, but it is a condition that we can make a lot better with topical medications. There's topical vasoconstrictors that do a beautiful job to constrict those dilated blood vessels. There are oral medications that can help fight the inflammatory process from the inside out. There are other topical medications that are basically going after certain microorganisms in our skin, like the Demodex mite that we don't want to talk about because it makes everybody have the heebie-jeebies, but we all have little mites in our skin, and rosacea-prone patients have a lot more mites present in their skin. So there's a topical ivermectin cream that can kill the microorganisms, kill those mites, and also calm inflammation. There's topical benzoyl peroxide products that do a beautiful job to calm inflammation, redness, and help with the papules and pustules. There's topical antibiotics like topical minocycline that do a great job. And there's new things in the pipeline. There's new things coming out. There's going to be an oral low-dose minocycline coming in the future. So there are a lot of options. What's frustrating about treating rosacea is there's not one thing that works for every rosacea patient. And sometimes patients will need multiple products in order to get their rosacea under control because they may have multiple different phenotypic type problems that need to be addressed. And if they have ocular rosacea changes and flushing and blushing and persistent facial erythema and papules and pustules, that right there might be three or four products that need to be prescribed. So explaining that and educating the patient to that degree takes time, but it is important.
Yeah. I mean, that is so interesting. I had no idea that there was that many different types.
Oh yeah. And it can present so many different ways. And it again looks different on a lot of patients. So, rosacea patients, I tell everybody it's going to be a journey, and we'll be on this journey together, and I say that because I'm on the journey. I'm on it with you. We're on this long trek. We're going to climb Machu Picchu together, but it is definitely something that can take a lot of time to get it under control. And sometimes we do have to try and fail a few things before we find the right formula that works for them. Sometimes we'll have to get IPLs and lasers involved and other cosmeceutical products. But you started out the question by asking, what are the don'ts? And there are so many don'ts. Rosacea is a powder keg ready to explode at any time. So this is a skin condition that can be ignited by a lot of different things. Again, stress and sun and heat and caffeine can light them on fire, right? And so that's like my every Tuesday at 9 a.m. because I work in Naples, Florida. So I have to have my coffee. I walk outside and it's always sunny and it's always hot. So right there, I'm striking, three strikes and I'm out. So it's something that we have to teach patients. Do not add anything else on that's going to freak your skin out. So there are some product lines that are really specifically geared for sensitive skin. And there's some product lines like Vanicream that have no parabens, no lanolins, no dyes, no perfumes, nothing in them that could additionally aggravate the skin. So I oftentimes will push patients toward those lines. There's a new-ish line called Senti that I actually just learned about at Diversity in Dermatology, and I'm so excited to learn more about this product. Their daily recovery type product is a daily topical cream that can actually help specifically calm that inflammatory process. The way that it works scientifically is really, really fantastically interesting to me. But it is another product that like has the rosacea, society seal of approval. So again, just like we're starting to see now, marketing does sway patients and can be very helpful sometimes.
Right.
But if you see products that are National Eczema Association certified, National Psoriasis Foundation certified, or now the American, you know, Acne Rosacea Society or the National Rosacea Society certified, that's impactful because they had to get that seal of approval. So Senti has that, and it's one of the only cosmeceutical lines that actually has that. But there are a lot of other product lines and even cosmeceutical lines that would be sold in a doctor's office or medical spa that really can kind of calm and quiet products. But there's a lot of products that can flare it up. So we have to really tread lightly with a lot of our anti-aging and peels and a lot of the things that we want to do to our skin might actually really freak rosacea out.
So really, if you suspect that you might have some rosacea, obviously get into your doctor.
Absolutely. And again, the primary care docs, you know, can usually get you started on stuff. They're probably going to start you on metronidazole, which is, again, kind of a dinosaur drug in my mind. I don't use any metronidazole unless patients have to try and fail it before they get to the next best. But usually, fortunately, a lot of times patients will come in already having tried that product, and then we can offer some additional help. Again, sometimes there's not one size fits all for everybody. There's not going to be one product that fits all. So sometimes they may need systemic and topical, or they may need two topicals, or even a topical and laser treatment. So we're always combining therapies, but patients with rosacea, you know, often get frustrated and they give up because they're not told that there are so many different options out there.
Well, and a lot of times I wonder how many are self-diagnosing. Also, thoughts on going to get a facial that's supposed to be for rosacea.
Right. So many estheticians, kudos to them for getting more education and getting more knowledge about different skin conditions. But we have two estheticians that work in our medical spa, in our office, and they are not allowed to diagnose, but they oftentimes will see things and they are so observant. Bring me in, you know, while the patient is still in their room and, hey, I just want Shannon to come take a look at this real quick. So they're pointing out things that could be suspicious. And sometimes they're the ones delivering the news. Hey, I think you may have, you know, a condition that's making your skin more red. Mm-hmm. And even though they can't officially diagnose them with rosacea, sometimes that's that patient's first point of contact. Right, you know, they're coming in to get their skin to look better, or to have a facial to kind of quiet down the angriness of their skin. And they don't even know they have rosacea. You know, maybe everybody in their family has rosacea. So it's just normal for them to, you know, to have redness or to have bumps or to have those breakouts or what have you. So estheticians, you know, need to be educated on all the different treatment options and certainly know what products to start them on. And if you have, you know, if there are estheticians that are going to be listening to the podcast, you know, find out, you know, from your specific cosmeceutical manufacturers that you carry in your spas, actually go to them. There's usually those companies are going to have amazing educators or nurse educators that can teach you about the product line and say, hey, look, you know, I have a client that comes in and has what I think is rosacea or what I think is acne. Which of your products actually have science and have actually been studied in those conditions? You know, if they have a condition that you're unsure about, always send them to a dermatology provider and make good relationships with derm providers in your area, just so you can have a good referral basis back and forth. And hey, we will gladly refer those patients back to you for hydrofacials and for coconut, you know, extractions and milia extractions, and which could lead to all kinds of other cosmetic services. But keep your clinical eyes open and definitely partner up with some local dermatology professionals. And, you know, it will just lead to a beautiful relationship of, you know, co-sharing of patients and what have you. But we can often help them get on the right track.
Yes. I feel like I could just sit and talk to you for hours on end, and you are so knowledgeable, and I am like writing stuff down, you know, number one, and I'm like, okay, I've got ideas.
Love it.
Talk to you offline. I've got some other things that I want to discuss because, man, you are such a wealth of knowledge, and it's been such a pleasure having you on and talking about all that you do and what you're so passionate about. It really just shines through. So thank you. I really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Janelle. I feel like, you know, those of us who just get stuck, you know, I of course want to help my patients and the people that come in to see me, but it's so nice to be able to kind of get little tidbits of knowledge out there so that other APPs and biologic coordinators and estheticians or anybody else who might be listening can help in their local area, because we are all here for each other and we all have to learn from each other. And And there's so many things that we just need to continue to strive toward learning. So I appreciate you just having this platform available so that we could talk and so that we could, again, learn a little bit from each other. So thank you so much, and would be happy to come back if we want to talk
For
about anything
sure.
else.
For sure. We definitely need to do a part two.
Sounds great. Janelle, it's
Thank
been a
you.
pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for spending a few minutes with me and listening to That's Derm Good. You can expect new episodes of That's Derm Good every week. The podcast is available on your favorite app, including where you're listening right now. Subscribe to the podcast so you never miss a new episode. Bye.